Welcome back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively doing the Zoom thing and getting out and touching real people and having real crab cakes. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. Let yourself play. We're going to be playing on Wednesday with our mayor, Brandon Scott. Also, Senator Corey McCray. Probably will get a sports look from sports cartoonist Mike Resigliano, who lives in the neighborhood. The neighborhood tour, the Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery. We will be in Larville this week, and then in Abingdon next Friday, Black Friday, at Conrad's Crabs, and then back to Pappas on the 3rd of December before the 30th anniversary. Been a little while since I've caught up with this guy. I'm embarrassed because I love having him on and talking rock and roll and baseball in season. We don't really play baseball here anymore. Sometimes that's hard for him and other folks on the outside to understand. 107 losses and nobody going to the game. But I tried in October to watch the World Series. This guy was having fun with it. You could follow him at Bizball Mari. He's one of the people that I've collected along life's journey. He is in the great town of Portland, Oregon. Mari Brown from Forbes joins us now in the aftermath of another World Series. Boy, I don't know anybody loves baseball more than you at this point. You love baseball.
I do. Of course I do, Nestor. It's baseball. Baseball never ends for me. I love all the sports. I always joke, you know. I love baseball and the lesser sports is the joke, but no, man, I watch it all, but baseball is kind of the stock and trade.
Well, yeah. And you know, you come at this honest, I'll condense 30 years into 2 minutes and say you were trying to get a team in Portland, you know, when all the expansion stuff's happening and teams are moving around and who knows whether Tampa's going to be in Tampa or Montreal at this point. I guess I want to come to you a little bit more because you do sort of fly in. You don't live in a major league town, but you love baseball and you follow it. You're in Seattle a whole lot. The state of the game's taking a hit. As I come to you now, and I'm literally, and I'm going to ask you to explain it, you and Eric Fisher and a bunch of my other esoteric buddies that are still way in on this. When I created this thing 30 years ago now next month, we had Camden Yards opening. The first baseball strike was 81, and then the problems they had in 87, and then obviously the shutdown in 94. I was in on all of that, Lords of the Realm and all of that. I hear about labor unrest now. I'll be honest. I don't know anything about it. I wouldn't be able to discuss it in the way that I would be comfortable discussing, which was at a very, very high level for a long, long time, chasing Don Fear and all that stuff around. Well, where's the state of baseball? Because it feels to me like they're all making a lot of money, right?
Well, yeah, everybody's making good money. I mean, that's never really been the problem. I think the big problem, Nestor, is the last two labor deals were really swung pretty significantly toward owners, right? I mean, the players had a leg up for a very long time. And the last two deals have largely gone to ownership. They've added more constraints with the luxury tax. I would dare say we're right on the edge of a cap. I mean, you can go above it, right? But it's really painful now. And that's something that, of course, the players don't want. They want a true free market system. It's not really that way anymore. And so what's happened now is they brought in a guy named Bruce Meyer, who worked under Don Fear at the NHLPA. After Don left the MLBPA, went to the NHLPA. So Bruce came over to kind of shore them up on the labor side. And he's a tough cookie, man. He's going up against Dan Hallam, who is really kind of underneath. He's the number two behind Rob Manfred at the league. And neither one of them really like to give up a lot of ground. But in terms of like how the state of the game is, I don't like the product, and I hate to use that word. I really hate it, but I don't like how the pace of the game has gone. I understand the managers are going to use however many pitchers they need, but it really starts to impact the flow of the game when you're starting to see, you know, eight pitchers being used in a game. It takes all the momentum out of it.
Mari, I had a back ailment that came and I love your shirt, by the way. People aren't listening. Mari Brown is wearing a Keith Richards for President shirt. I called an audible The third week of September, and instead of going to Detroit to see the Ravens play when Tucker hit the field goal, I watched that in a bar in St. Louis, preparing to see the Rolling Stones open the tour, first show ever without Charlie. At least publicly, one that Bob Kraft didn't pay for the night before in a hangar in Foxborough. So I went out to St. Louis, and I wound up. Obviously, being in St. Louis on a Sunday afternoon, it's a little haunting that there is no football team, and that's why the Stones are in. But I went to the old Budweiser bar that's about to become a casino, and it's across the street from the new Busch Stadium, a place I had been with my wife and had a beer before a game on our baseball tour. And I went in, and it's Fred Bird Redbird. I mean, the Cardinals had won like 17 games in a row that day, and the Padres were in full meltdown. So that gives you the time frame of the last week of September. And I could sense the St. Louis crowd, and that I was in a baseball crowd for the first time, certainly since the plague, because I live in Baltimore and there's no energy here at all for the team. And I sensed the energy for baseball. I hurt my back. I went to Omaha to see the Eagles. I came home. I was flat on my back. And in the month of October, I was available to watch every game because I was on my back in bed. Game started 1, 4, 7, 10. And I had it on a lot. And again, I'm not trying to be like a dick. I just don't recognize it. Like when I put it on, the players, the themes, the announcers, the pace of play, starting pitchers aren't really starting pitchers. In a lot of cases, there was more enthusiasm in that bar in St. Louis than there was at Rays playoff games. You know, empty stadiums, not empty, but not full, not vibrant. And I watched it, you know, on and off during the month, and I never got into it in the way that I'll get into a World Cup when I sit in June and start at 2 a.m. and just be watching Peru play, Tunisia and just be into it. I didn't get into the tournament, and no one sucked me in. And I really hate the Astros. Like that part I could get around, and rooting for the Braves to some degree, I guess. I could get in on all that. But the actual games, man, the part where I sit down and like get popcorn and be on every pitch and be on pitching changes and be on the ebb and flow of a 5-game or 7-game series, dude, just I couldn't. I tried, and I'm a baseball guy. I found it very unrecognizable. I don't want to be mean or say it's bad or boring or the shifts and the outcomes and how long the game. I could get on all that, get off my lawn. I'm just being like globally recognizing it and wanting to be reeled in the way a stupid Chiefs-Raiders game can reel me in on a Monday night.
Well, yeah, I don't think you were alone in that. I get paid to watch baseball. I watch it all, right? I think I watch about 200 games a year. So obviously,
how much of that is Mariners, by the way? Because you love the Mariners, yeah, right?
Watch every Mariners game because I'm a glutton for punishment,
right?
But watch a lot of other games. I watch on average 2 to 3 games a day, depending upon how things are. So obviously, I'm not the norm. I mean, you would be more the norm. And so, hey, it's cyclical, I think, in a lot of ways, right? I mean, was this the most compelling World Series? No, not at all. I mean, you had a team that, you know, you mentioned the cheating scandal, and I think that turned some people off, and you mentioned the Braves, and there's this, you know, chant and arm-swinging chop that I think turns off some other people. And then it was a largely Southern affair, right? I mean, it was a Southern regional kind of World Series. So it didn't really resonate, I don't think, nationally, like certainly a Dodgers Red Sox or a Dodgers Yankees, you know, it just didn't have that thing. So, I mean, you're in St. Louis, right? Which, you know, is obviously a core, it's cornerstone club in the league. I mean, they have a solid fan base. So,
well, I mean, I'm in Baltimore, and we built all of that here for that, and to see it, to sort of helicopter in for a couple of hours, where I'm in a big bar, you know, that on a football game day, where I want to watch my game and other games are on, everybody in there was watching baseball and turned into it, and that hasn't happened in my town in a long. We have a major league team here. Like, we have a real team here. So if you're telling me that Rutschman and, you know, when these guys come and they start winning, I'll come back. Okay, my last name's Aparicio. I'll hear that, but then do I recognize it when the starting pitcher is pitching an inning in a third and everybody's moving to the right side of the field when one guy gets up to the left side of the field and the game's 4.5 hours long? Like, those are the things that globally, I don't know how they're going to fix it, Mari, and I know you're right about it. And my concerns come to your front door years later where we've lost 107, 115, 110 games, and everybody here has a lacrosse stick with their kid. So I don't really know that it's coming back here. I pray that it comes back here, and I want. And when it does come back, it needs to be compelling to me. I need to like it.
Yeah, and this labor situation, right? And we can look at this two ways. At least this is how I look at it. So, yes, there's acrimony. Yes, there's the possibility of a lockout. Will that turn fans off? Well, if it's in the off season, yeah, it'll turn fans off. But they'll forget about it as soon as the games come back. So if it's an off-season lockout, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. If the sides are really looking at the game and going, look, and they won't. They'll look at the economics of it and see who can get, you know, the MLBPA is going to look at it from what the players need for money, and the owners are going to think about it from their thing and the money. And in the middle is what is the product? If you really want to grow the game, they've got to do something about pace of play. They've got to do something, I think, about the shift a little bit. I don't know. You don't eliminate it, but I think you could make some adjustments to it. And I'm fully on board with a pitch clock. The pitchers will hate it, and that's where that'll become a thing, right, with the Players Association. But look, if you've ever gone to a game with a pitch clock, you, if you're at a game, you're over there looking at it, and in about an inning and a half, you're like, it's transparent. And on television, it would be even more so. And I
The amazing thing for me is like these old World Series games that like I was looking at time of games back in the early 70s, a World Series. I don't even remember what it was. It might have been the 71 World Series. Something came to me that was a history thing, and I looked it up. And I'm like, this game had 18 hits. It was 9-4. It was 2 hours and 38 minutes. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself that like would never, and that was a really explosively offensive game in those days. That was a long game, a tedious game. And I'm thinking they're never going to put that genie back in the box with commercials and advertising and stuff like that. But once the game starts, I mean, the NFL has that problem. They go away. You can go number two and get a beer and take the dog for a walk and come back and miss a minute of the game, right? I mean, to some degree. But at least when you do sit down, the NFL keeps you at it and you're waiting for the next play. Baseball didn't do that for me in October in any of the series in any way. And it'd be kind of sad, bro. You know what I mean? Really. Like, my last name's Aparicio. It's the reason I'm here. It's the reason I live in a free society is because of baseball. So I love baseball, but I don't recognize it. And what I'm hearing now is they're going to fight about money again. And I'm like, okay. Well, and the smart people like you are already admitting that they don't really admit that there's a problem. Because they haven't done anything about it.
Yeah, I would look at it this way. So it's funny you mentioned that. So you know what I did just a couple of days ago? I sat down and I watched the 93 All-Star game from Baltimore.
There you go.
Right? And I watched Mark Langston and I timed it. And it was incredible. So like Grissom got in the box and he never stepped out. And so it was like boom, 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 just this really crisp thing. And then, you know, when you started to get some other guys starting to step out of the box, and it came more like I'm used to now.
Well, Crux sort of famously stepped out of the box and was famously told to get back in.
Right. I think that it's possible. Will it ever get to the, like, 1971? No. No. But I don't know if it necessarily has to be there. It has to be better than it is now. And so I don't know with pitchers. So how did we get here, right? You mentioned the use of pitchers. So velocity is a big deal. It's not just velocity, but velocity with movement. I mean, the idea that we can have sliders in the 95-mile-an-hour range now is not uncommon.
Well, nobody was ever taught spin rate. They were taught, you know, flick it. You know, like they weren't taught this. Your seam rate is this, and we have different technology. I mean, look, the Orioles are the kings of that, along with banging trash cans, apparently, in Houston, although they have no knowledge of any of that. Of course, Mike Elias and Sig Meidel, Astro Ball, they would never be a part of that. So we're supposed to say that they're never a part of that, but they're the scientists behind all of this, right? And teaching younger players these esoteric things that now are commonplace. I mean, every franchise is teaching that, right? That's the stock of baseball now, right?
Yeah, I mean, So data is used in everything. I mean, baseball is always going to be the kind of the forefront. It's always been, and I think it always will. And it is, we're starting to see it in other sports. I mean, it's not like pace isn't a problem in other sports, but the difficulty is baseball's design, right? And you mentioned football, right? So, and you can leave, right? So somebody asked me, they're like, pace of play in football is still bad. I'm like, the difference is I can go and cut away. I can look at different schemes. I can go and look at skill player routes in between actual play. And I've got a bunch of content that I can go ahead and I can do on television. Look, Nestor, if you
I would tell you with football, they could add 10 seconds to the clock, and that 10 seconds would be used for a replay of every play that the gamblers would like more. That if the game went a little longer in the NFL, they wouldn't mind it because that replay time, something happens on every play. There's a lot happening on every play where there's not a lot happening on every pitch. The only pitches that they replay in baseball are things near the strike zone that they bitch about, right?
Yeah. So I think that if I looked at the NFL and I looked at MLB, it reminds me of two things. If I'm at a baseball game in the summer with Nestor and we're having beers and bullshitting, it's a great time, right? And you're Fair not enough. Aware of the clock. You're sitting there, you're having a good time. It's a social, more of a social thing. I'm in the summer, I'm with family, I'm with friends. At home, it's entirely different.
At home, dude, it's right here. It's right here. My head's here between pitches.
Yeah.
Twitter, right.
If I go to an NFL game, it's largely, you know, it's cold. It's in the, you know, it's not, you want more action. At home, I've got all the content in the world. It's almost as if they're flip opposites. One is a very television centric. I mean, football, the field matches and all the players, you can really get most of the field in, and it's designed almost for television. Baseball is largely a pitcher-batter thing. That's where the action is. If you're striking out, there's not much going on. Until a ball is hit in play, do you get the other players involved? And that really, just by its own design, makes television a lot more difficult to keep people transfixed. So now the game itself is changing a lot. Pitchers have a clear advantage. Even when taking away the sticky stuff, they still had an advantage. So you have that. Your strikeouts are up. Home run rates have been up historically, but when you're starting to see more strikeouts than hits, you got a real problem with your game. And so they do. I think this whole labor thing, if the union and the owners don't go at the center of it, we're losing money right now. If they didn't make any change to the labor deal in and of itself, they're going to start to lose money somewhere along the line, whether it's 5 or 10 or when they redo television deals, whatever, the money is going to start to drift away, attendance, whatever. So they got to address that. I really do. But the situation is largely going to be around teams are tanking, and that's not a good thing. They have to change, I think, the draft order process. The Players Association will want that. What's happened, though, Nestor, is Rob Manfred and Dan Hallam have come forward with this like radical change, this proposal. It's like, let's get rid of salary arbitration. Let's use the pool thing. Let's use WAR to basically measure how players are. And what's happening, Nestor, is the owners are coming forward and trying to take away. There are two areas, right, where a player agent can negotiate salary. That's salary arbitration and free agency. And they're looking to get rid of salary arbitration in that way. And the Players Association, of course, is going, no way.
That's a war crime for them. They're never going to listen to that.
Well, they're not. And the bad thing, of course, is, hey, man, we're less than 3 weeks away. Tomorrow it'll be 2 weeks away from the labor deal ending. If they're close, it doesn't mean that they're going to have a lockout. They can go, you know what, we'll just go either without a labor deal or extend the current one for a couple weeks and try and reach a deal, or Rob Manfred has that lever and he can pull that lever to try and, you know, create a deadline that's for real. Your free agency would freeze. Your trades would freeze. Players wouldn't be able to go to facilities. That would be frozen. And if it happens right after December 1st and isn't resolved before the 6th, then the MLB portion of the baseball winter meetings would be canceled.
Well, all of this really, the ish hit the fan during the plague when they were trying to figure out whether to get on the field or not. And, you know, a lot of the owners, certainly the one here, didn't want to play. You know, it's saved them from losing 100 games another year. We can say they've lost three 100 in out of four or whatever. But the bad teams didn't want to play, and the teams where there was no economic upside. And even this year was troublesome for a lot of places. You mentioned tanking on the field. There's a lot of tanking going on off the field because nobody, you know, were ramped up to go back to games and the off season and the plague and everything that happened. And then places where, you know, it became unsafe at various points. Mari Brown is here. He is with Forbes. He's Bizball Mari. He's out in Portland, Oregon. No one covers baseball and the business of baseball better. And I started reading these, the saber rattling for war amongst baseball owners and the Players Association. It sounds very familiar to me, but again, it's unfamiliar in that I'm not really into how the sausage is made this time around, but I am into where the future of it's going to be for my town, for the stadium here, for the city, the Nationals' involvement in all of this, the Masson couple of $100 million fight that continues on, and Nashville's quest for baseball and how that relates to a 2-year lease here that feels like a real band-aid. And Mari, I'm here. There's not a whole lot of appetite for baseball here, and that's really, really sickening to me. But I don't want to say the team could slink out the side door and blame the city and blame the they could. I don't know that Major League Baseball would allow them that. I keep hearing they wouldn't, but I don't think there's if you move, you move. And if you do it, it's a unilateral decision. Ask Kroenke, ask all of these guys that are fighting that fight. And I'm worried about how it gets resurrected here, where the money comes from, where the industry comes from, where the business comes from to resurrect it and bring people back downtown to this facility. I talk to a lot of suburban white people that vote Trump. They're the core of the baseball fan base. And I ain't never going back downtown in Baltimore. I don't love Baltimore anymore. And so those were the primary people that were coming to Orioles games, people from the suburbs coming in. I'm very, very concerned for, you know, this is a very toxic thing that's gone on between plague, 110 losses, 30 years of really, really bad ownership. I mean, all the things that the promise of that 1993 All-Star game, including Geddy Lee singing O Canada, which I'll resort to in a moment when we get to our rock and roll portion. Things have changed so much in those 30 years. I mean, you watching that All-Star game, you're talking about the top of the top of my life of being a baseball fan when in that time frame in Baltimore. I don't see anything like that's coming back here anytime soon, given the bad will. Goodwill, and then there's bad will. They have a lot of bad will here.
Yeah, and look, man, I mean, I'm looking at what the Tigers are doing right now in the offseason. So they did a one-year deal for a good backstop. They just went out and signed a multi-year deal for a starter. And they're doing this in a climate where nobody really knows what the luxury tax or anything will be. That's a clear indicator of a team that was down that goes, okay, we've been down long enough. Let's go do something. Are the Orioles doing that? Are they really? I don't see it. Look, man.
Well, they would say we did something when we signed David Segee and Jeff Conine and blah, blah, blah. You know, that was the old man. We're just going to try to sell some tickets or put a face on the wall. I mean, they would have kept Adam Jones around here if they were going to do that. Certainly, and they have this kid Mancini that's a nice kid, but he's not selling tickets, and he's an amazing story, but all they've done is lose since he's been here. So I think it's really hard in these markets where the temperatures change for coming into the city, literally politically. And I don't need to tell you in Portland that, you know, you put a baseball team in the middle of Baltimore and you feed them Fox News. They don't want to come to Baltimore anymore for a ball game.
Yeah. And there is that in certain places. I mean, look, man, I live in Portland, right? We're kind of the West Coast distributor of disturbance, right? And I get it. I play music downtown and I've got people saying, hey, I'm not going to go downtown. I'm afraid to. And I went downtown and it didn't seem too much different. But the narrative is there. And that's a product of social media. So let's go back to the Orioles. If you're already in a bad spot and you're trying to come out of this like 1-2 punch, right? Whether it's the election or whether it's the pandemic, and then you're a bad team. Look, man, at a certain point, you really do have to go, like I do with my promoter. My promoter's like, if we don't start playing downtown, you just have to get people back into it and it'll slowly come back. You don't give people a reason to go watch Baltimore Orioles baseball, then they're not going to start coming back. People have figured out other things to do. I mean, that's the real thing. I thought that there was going to be, and this was whether it was sports or concerts, that there would be this incredible pent-up demand. Like, we're all stuck at home. I got to go get out. And when things opened up, we'd all rush to it. And that's not what has happened.
I think people have found new things. My wife learned that she liked the mountains and climbing through them. Yeah. And that's what she does now. And she didn't go to the Vikings game last week, and there's no crime in that. She's done it for 25 years, and she's doing different things. And I would say the same thing. I've gotten into this variety thing, Mari. I've gotten old. I want to do stuff I've never done, not stuff I've done a million times. So, and that includes a lot of things that I've never done, right? So I think going to a baseball game, and to what I get back to with baseball is I put it on in October again after not watching it for most of the summer, because why would I, you know, other than having it on for a minute and saying, how does the broadcast sound? How many people are there? But not like a 9-inning appointment, you know, like something you flick through. And how does that change, you know? And I don't know when it's not compelling, and they don't market, Mari. They don't even put their tickets on sale. And like, it's such a, they're poorly run on top of all of these other issues that they have. And I'm fearful. I bring people like you on to talk me out of the tree that says that on November 15th of a year from now, John Angelos won't say, I've cut a deal to move the Orioles to Nashville. Suck it. You know what I mean? And come get it, because that's what they do. That's what owners do. They say, I'm moving, come get it. Especially if they have lawyers and they have a $4 billion franchise and they feel like I'm going to double the value of my franchise by moving the Raiders to Las Vegas, the Rams to LA, the Chargers to wherever they wind up, because the Chargers aren't there, right? I mean, you watched that the other night. Right. Like, you know, that they are going to wind up in Europe or someplace is where they're going to wind up. And I'm not saying the Orioles have to wind up somewhere, but the Rays need to wind up somewhere, and the A's need to wind up somewhere. And I was talking Minnesota. We played the Vikings 2 weeks ago. I had totally forgotten that they were going to contract the Twins. I mean, I was on the radio when all that went on. But at some point, they need homes and teams and stadia, and then more than that, local business. More than any other sport, they need local business to step up. And regional, they need to be powerful in that way. And that's a really – that's a burned bridge in Baltimore. I mean, really, it's torched with this owner here.
Here's what I think is probably most concerning. If you look at what owners are now striving to get. So the Ricketts family and the Cubs are going to build basically a sports book, two-story sports book. They're trying to get right next to Wrigley Field. And the Ballpark Village idea, which, of course, we saw when the Braves moved to Cobb County, or whether we see it in St. Louis, or whether the A's move to Vegas and build a casino next door and a bunch of other mixed-use development. Well, what's this tell me? It tells me that the owners realize that the game itself isn't what is really going to pull in the most money. That this the idea that a bunch of people are coming, 82 dates a year, and then I build basically an entertainment district around it. That means that they're looking outside of core baseball. Now, core baseball is making, or did, leading up to the pandemic in 2019, gross revenues were $10.7 billion. I mean, that's a lot of dough. Yeah, there's a lot of expenses that come out of that. But they're still a very profitable industry, right? But the media landscape is changing. You know, the Sinclair deal for all the Sinclair regional sports networks is a debacle. You mentioned Mass and being a mess. I think they're starting to look and go, you know what, man, let's start thinking about how we can develop outside this. And that'll be where we'll stem the flow of money that might decrease on the baseball revenue side. And that's an indication that the sport isn't really as compelling as it should be. So they got it.
I would see Nashville almost as the LA of Major League Baseball at this point. Like, well, getting there would be a freaking pot of gold that Tampa could never be, that Oakland could never be. Like, that getting there and getting there first into white country music and baseball, it just, dude, it sounds like a summer dream in that good weather. Like, And population growth off the charts. Somebody's going to Nashville. Somebody's taking that money. I find it very, very hard to believe they won't have a team there 8-10 years from now.
Well, that, yeah, 10 years from now. Yeah. They, look, you got to have to have markets to leverage other markets, right? I mean, somebody's going to sit there. If you're the Rays, you're going to the people in St. Pete and going, hey, it's either Montreal or Nashville or you guys, and whoever's first will probably go there. And the situation in Oakland isn't too terribly different. And then Portland will be used as a pawn, or San Antonio, or whoever it is, right? That's been going. That's agnostic.
You think Portland can never get a team? Is that where you are at that point now?
Oh, right now? No. Now they look, man. 10 years, maybe. But there's a severe PR rebuilding that has to go on in this market. And look, I'm a liberal, right? I'm like, hey, I get what you're trying to do, but I'm tired of it. And if I'm tired of it, then the majority is. And there's no way you were going to bring in Rob Manfred in the middle of last year. They were going to fly him in. The baseball boosters here were going to fly him in. And they're like, how can we do this with like avoiding downtown where all the chaos is? And that's gone. I mean, there hasn't been anything going on for a while now, but that narrative will linger, and that requires some rebuilding. But look, it'll still be used. If they coughed up a stadium tomorrow and said, hey, the Portland would be used, or there would be a consideration about it. But again, Nestor, I think the core thing about baseball's problems are largely the NFL is never a good barometer. It's a limited number of games, which drives up demand, and it is perfectly suited for television. And so the numbers bear this out, right? Everything else, if you look at the numbers, are flat or going down. And the NFL is going up, and it's its own universe. So you can really never use the NFL as a barometer. You can use the NBA and the NHL. The NHL is starting to look a little bit better now. I mean, they got the ESPN deal. You know,
they also have a compelling sport. And I'll say that, you know, I can sit here on flat ground at 53 and say, of all the sports, and I've said this on the radio for 30 years and it pissed people off, hockey's the sport that if you go to a game, you like it. If you watch it and you follow it a little bit, the speed of it, things happen, the puck's in play, there's always a chance of a goal, there's an ebb and a flow, and you get to cheer and you get to pee twice. And, you know, I mean, it literally, to me, it's always been the best sport, and that's a difficult American admission for me. And I'm a hockey guy, you know, and I've been a hockey guy most of my life, but I've always felt like that's the sport where the sport sells the sport more than any of the other sports. A lot of these are about making you cry, or storylines, or connections, or, you know, I played it when I was a kid, or it's poor and you can dribble a basketball or kick a soccer ball anywhere. But for action, American kind of action, modern action, hockey's the best sport.
Yeah, and I would just, you know, if I look at, it's not just hockey or football or baseball's problem. If we're going to talk about baseball, right, the large problem is there's a lot of sports on television and streaming now. I mean, I couldn't believe it. I turn on NBC and I'm watching the IMSA sports car race. And F1 is a huge thing now in America that's gotten much larger.
Dude, I'm paying the Big Ten for this Big Ten network. They got girls volleyball on today and wrestling matches. And just just stuff. They just put it on, you know, like, and it just runs.
If you have a vested interest in your baseball, you're like, how are we going to retain people? And it can get back to this thing that we're going to see, right? We've got owners trying to hold on to power, and we have players trying to pull some of it back. And at the core of it, the core problem is there are some markets, and you live in one of them where nobody's trying because they're like, you know, centralized money, which is, you know, television and streaming is much bigger than it used to be. And we can go ahead and we can have a limited attendance or limited viewership audience and still be okay. And that's bad.
Well, it's better than giving Manny Machado $300 million.
Well,
that's how the Angelos family would look at it. Glad I didn't give him that money. We already wasted this money on Davis. Look at how that turned out.
So, you can look. You mentioned the Padres and their collapse. But I will give their ownership this. In a medium-sized market, right, they tried. And they're going to continue to try. Now, are they going to be able to sustain it? No. They're never going to be the Dodgers. They're never going to be the Yankees. They're never going to be the Red Sox. But they're trying. And that should send a message. The other team that sent a message was the Braves. So here they were. They were mediocre at the trade deadline. And what did they do? They became buyers, not sellers. And all they did was win the World Series. So this idea, and now the other key piece is that as part of this negotiation, the owners are really going to try and get a couple more teams. They're going to try and get 14 teams into the playoff picture. And that will make it either one of two ways. You can either slide in and not have to invest, or it'll incentivize teams to do it. They got to change the draft. This idea of being worst is first has got to change. They got to get something more like the NBA. I don't know if they got to go to ping pong balls or whatever it is, but they have to remove this incentive to lose to gain picks, because now young is better. That's another problem, of course, for the players. They go, hey, we're not investing in long-term deals with our veterans anymore. They're investing in younger players, and we'll take that risk on. Okay, fine. Then you have to change the draft order in some capacity. These things have to change. They really do. They're fundamental at this point, because if they don't, they're just burning their own house down at this point. I mean, you mentioned your market is the best, one of the best markets to use as an example of what is completely wrong. And you just can't go about it for multiple years like that. The Tigers go down, they come back up, fine. The Mariners haven't been in the playoffs in 20 years, try something new. If you're the Cubs, you got no excuse. You don't do what the Cubs have done. You know, that's bad. When we start seeing high revenue clubs using tanking as a method to be good, because we've got this feeling that owner or that fans will go, you know what, if we win, I'm willing to suffer through, you know, multiple hundred lost seasons. And I always use this analogy, Nestor, that it's like being on a roller coaster, right? You go high, you go low, and at the end you get off the ride and you feel jerked around and nauseous. And that's what baseball is becoming. I'm going to lose a lot, and it's harder to bring fans back once they start winning, because they're like, is a fool in me now? Am I just going to get ready to suck? So your Pittsburghs, your Baltimores are the worst. You cannot be in that position. You want to be that way for a couple of years, it's bad. Being this way for a long period of time is poisoning the well.
Well, it's even bad when you're the Royals or the Nationals and you've actually won and had a parade. Mari Brown is here. He's Bizball Mari. He's at Forbes. He covers baseball. Dude, I've been staring at you for half an hour. I just figured out that Ken Griffey hat you got on, so that's pretty sharp. So I want to get that. But the Rolling Stones shirt and the rock and roll thing, I've been unleashed this year to go to concerts, seen a lot of concerts, outdoors, did a lot of that. Winter, I don't know. You know, I saw Marcus King a couple weeks ago. My back's been a little effed up. The Wallflowers were through. I got Genesis. You know, Phil Collins is going to sit in a chair later this week. I'm trying to come to terms as to how I feel about that. But it feels like the winter time, we've slowed it down, that summer has become this incredible concert thing that everybody's ramped up around. And I think bands are more apt to be playing in the summer on the plague side of this. It feels like it's winding down a little bit for the winter. And it feels like 4 months from now, I'll appreciate it more when, you know, I go to my first outdoor gig in March or April.
Yeah, so me as a performing musician, the summer was great. I mean, I was playing to some fairly large crowd. Well, for me, you know, I'm playing to, you know, a couple thousand people outdoor was great.
By the way, I didn't introduce you as the Malcolm Young voice of AC/DC cover band, Shoot the Thrill. I'm sorry.
Right.
I was almost called you Thunderstruck, but I knew you're Shoot the Thrill.
Yeah. So I went to the first national act I saw indoors was I went and saw Rival Sons last Thursday, and it was great, but the room probably could have been bigger or had more people in it. And it was show proof of acts and go. I'm going to go see Baroness on Sunday. I'm going into the best club Portland has for sound, but it only holds about 400 people, and it'll be the same drill, proof of acts and go to it. I'm already like, I got offered a gig in a 2,500 seat venue. We've sold it out before, and we talked about it with the band, and it doesn't feel like we can do that now. So I think people are still feeling it out. The band and I agreed. We were like, you know what, if we're going to do that thing, let's try next fall when, you know, and let's see how people feel going into it next year. But this is, you know, again, I'll be interested to see how the NBA's attendances and the NHL's in some pockets of the country, it's like, yeah, we don't care.
Were you unmasked at your clubs? I mean, in Baltimore, we still have masks indoor, and you know, I'm respecting it. When I walk into places where the ceiling's lower, I get a little freaked out. I was at a bar in Fells Point over the weekend. I'm like, hey, I need a little more fresh air than what I'm getting here, you know? So I think we all have a different level of risk management and how we feel about it. And I'm double vaxxed, but not triple vaxxed, right? And I know a lot of double vaxxed people that have gotten sick lately in the last couple of months and the Delta variant. So I think we're all feeling it out. But I do know I have those Pearl Jam tickets in Oakland on my app. And if they announced it tomorrow, I'd book a flight and just try to do it because I'm 53, Mari. My back hurts. I'm trying to do everything.
Yeah. And I'm older than you are. It is, you know, like I said, I live in a state that probably has the most stringent mask policy in the country. And it's no big whoop, you know, and happens. But what happens, Nestor, and you probably know this. You go into a place, you order a drink, you pull your mask down, you have your drink. And after that, it's really hard to police. And so it really is. I'm triple vaxxed. I had to get tested once. That's it. And I've dodged it, and I'm in the people business, right? I mean, I'm playing gigs with lots of people. It's outdoors, mostly, couple indoor gigs. Knock on wood, no problem. But back to the sports thing or events, right? Sports are events. Conventions are events. Concerts. There was this idea that we were all going to race back to them, and I'm not sure we're quite there yet. But one thing, I don't know if we're ever going to walk away from COVID. It'll be endemic. It'll be, you know, hopefully we get away from the total case numbers and start talking about hospitalizations, which, praise God, keep going down. And if we get into that, then it'll be, this is our new norm, you know, and it'll be, hey, the summer's here and we take our masks off and we go do stuff. And hey, we're back into the winter and fall months and maybe we got to bring it back. Some places it'll be highly political, other places it won't. And so I just think it's a new norm. And sports has to deal with this. The NFL doesn't have to. I mean, wherever they're at.
Well, they do when Ben Roethlisberger tests positive, he can't play, right? I mean, literally.
Rodgers.
Yeah, right. Or lying about it, even worse, right? Mari, I'll let you go, man. We could sit here and go all night with the rock and roll. I'm following along. I'm looking forward to getting back out to Portland. I ain't afraid of Portland. So, if I get out there, I'll find something better to do than go to a Blazers game with you. But I will find we will Portlandize again, and I will Eugene and Salem and everywhere else before it's all over with. But it's always great to have you on, and I love the Keith Richards shirt, man. I mean, the night I saw him in St. Louis, he played happy, and it made me happy. That's all I can say.
Nestor, you take care of yourself, man. I sure love you, man. You take care. Help your back gets better.
Hey, so far, so good. I've been carrying people too long, and it's the time they carry me. Mari Brown is Biz Ball Mari. You can find him at Forbes covering the business of baseball and some automotive and some other sports stuff, and certainly with his rock and roll band, Shoot the Thrill, playing those AC/DC songs, man. Got to get the music back. Get some rock and roll going here. It's wintertime. I'm Nestor. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.